We continue our look at the jury recommendations in the inquest into ending intimate partner violence in Ontario with number 70, which is again aimed at the chief firearms officer. Joining us to talk about it today is Interval House Executive Director Aaron Lee. Aaron, welcome back.
Thanks so much. Good to be with you.
So number 70 says the CFO must create guidelines for staff in making decisions regarding whether to issue, review, revoke, or add conditions to possession acquisition licenses or PALs to ensure consistency among staff and through time. Particular attention should be paid to red flags and risk factors around IPV, including where there is no conviction. So this is, again, being prepared.
It is absolutely being prepared. It is absolutely making sure that we are ensuring system communication. It is absolutely connected to other recommendations related to risk, related to likelihood, related to all of those red flags, cautions, and things that we know happen in this cycle, and we're just not always able to articulate it. And I think that it speaks to our unfortunate rural realities where, you know, having guns in your possession is significant in rural communities and all hunting communities. It's really significant. And we need to make sure that there are some increased guidelines, that there is a little bit more attention to details, that perhaps we err on the side of likelihood versus ensuring that folks can have their guns in their possession or acquire new guns. It's a very, I mean, obviously, you know, in all levels of government, issues of possession and gun acquisition has been a major issue federally and provincially. And I think that the reality is that with the number of murders, when we consider the mass casualty and the other things that are going on around us, we need to increase the capacity of folks to reassess and make good decisions as it relates to guns.
Now, we know that there's responsible gun owners out there, and certainly we're not targeting any of them, you know, but I'll be completely honest with you. Firearms and guns terrify me. Unless it's in a holster on a police officer's utility belt, then I don't want to see it. I really don't. I'm not a hunter. I've never been into that, and so on and so forth. I know plenty of people who are. They're very responsible and all that. But we talk about the acquisition part of it, and that is where things can be a little bit tricky because, yes, they are using it essentially as a tool, but they may not even know it at the time, but it could be used as a weapon in a fit of rage and an emotional moment.
I think that that's part of it. And I absolutely agree with you. There are lots of very responsible gun owners. I think there are lots of very responsible gun owners that feel like the issues related to accountability and how guns are misused as weapons of control and violence in intimate partner relationships, I think that they are as equally upset and frustrated with that process because it reflects poorly on those who are responsible. I think that the key to this recommendation is anticipating escalation, right? No one ever wants to believe that somebody who is in a violent relationship and is the alleged abuser is going to go to that extent where they will threaten with weapon, where they will forcibly control someone with weapon, and where they will actually fire a weapon to keep control of their partner. But we can't possibly control escalation and anticipate escalation, and we need to put things in place that give the system permission to do so, so that it errs on the side of the victim and the families that are impacted by this level of violence.
When they say the red flags, I mean, that is obviously a key because you can take two different people, one who's been a contributing member of society, volunteering and so on and so forth for all of their lives, and they may have a gun because they're a hunter or whatever. You're not as worried about that person who may have a history of, you know, whether it be like violence, like getting into fights or whatever with the police. And then all of a sudden that person is looking for it. I think that's where they're going when they talk about looking for those red flags, risk factors around IPV, including where there's no conviction. You have to take a look at the person's history and sort of extrapolate the possibilities and then decide whether or not this person should be granted the PAL.
I agree 100%. It is about putting things in place. It also, for me, speaks to the systemic issues where we need to ensure that we're talking to victims. Victims are the best predictors of what's happening in their life and what can happen in their life. We need to make sure we're working with probation and parole and making sure that we have the process in place to share information where we're concerned. We need to talk about how do we navigate that with police and with justice partners as it relates to their not being a conviction status on file. All of those things we need to mitigate by understanding and looking at risk factors that exist, especially if we look back at reports from the Domestic Violence Death Review Committee, where there are 41 risk factors that we assess in every murder that happens, and we can correlate those things to weapons. And it is important to know that in rural communities, women are 30% more likely to be threatened by a firearm.
All great points, of course, as always, Aaron. We could talk about this, even longer. And instead of doing that, we're going to talk about the next recommendation next week, which falls along the same line. So the conversation will continue next week. Thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you.
Aaron Lee, Executive Director of Lanark County Interval House, joining us as she does every week as we take another look at a jury recommendation in the inquest into ending intimate partner violence here on 88.1 MyFM and LanarkLeadsToday.ca.